welcome to yet another fastest 40 minutes in podcasting. We are getting closer and closer to the regular season. And I am here with Ross and a couple special guests, being that it is the still Kansas State week for another 4.5 hours. We thought we'd squeeze in another Unholy Alliance podcast. So please welcome to the, I was going to say program, but that sounds way more official than it really is. We'll just say, please say hi to Ty and, or to TB and Panjandrum of Bring On The Cat.
Somebody. Hi.
Okay.
Hi, this is TB.
Good. And it's also Ty and Brett, because I'll inevitably call them that instead as we go on. So, all right, this is Kansas State week. We had our typical off-season week on Rock'em Nation. We had our links, had our stat nerd posts, had our video reminders of years past. Had an interesting debate on Wednesday on the Rock'em Roundtable before things completely fell apart and turned R-rated. at least R-rated, I should say. So, basically, I wish Seth was available to come tonight, but he's packing up to move. There's kind of, I don't know, it's hard to define the Bill Snyder ceiling at this point with the environment at hand in the Big 12 North and just the different power structure and everything else. Ty, you and I talked about it in our last podcast, so I guess we'll try to cede the floor a little bit to Brett here. Brett, do you want to just try to give us a feel for what you think the ceiling is for the program is?
Well, I think the ceiling is probably competing for the division. I don't think, you know, given the current power structure, he can rebuild the program within, you know, whatever the arbitrary time frame it is to put this thing back together again. I mean, if it's 5 years that he wants to stick around, I mean, I don't think he can build a program in 5 years that can compete with the Oklahomas and Texases of the world at this point. It's not like it was before, where there was kind of a, you know, a vacuum down south when he was able to kind of walk into the Big 12 with a powerful program coming out of the Big 8. I think he can probably get competitive in a couple of years, a few years, maybe to the point where if the ball bounces our way, we might be able to represent in the conference title game if the North stays weak. But for the most part, this year, I think most folks hope for a bowl next year, given how many seniors leave due to the Ron Prince JUCO experiment. I think we would love just to get to 500 and then maybe the following year with a couple of years of decent recruiting and maybe some more junior college infusion, much more, you know, less of an impact, emphasis on that, I guess. But I think a couple of years we can maybe be competitive again and maybe be at least a dark horse candidate for the North, but not anytime in the next 2 years for sure.
Yeah, I don't think my answer changed too much from where I was a couple weeks ago after going through all this during K-State week here. But yeah, I hadn't really connected just how many, I was going to say deadweight seniors. That's kind of mean. Seniors there are on the team. Because, I mean, as you guys have pointed out within the last couple weeks, really, and probably all off season, honestly, just, you know, if you take last year's team, you make them better coached, even if nothing else really changes, then, I mean, you know, 5-7, it's at least very likely to duplicate that. And then, you know, you sneak in a couple more wins here and there, like a big home win over Kansas or Missouri or something, and you can sneak into 7 wins and a bowl bid, and 6 won't get it with the 2 1AA teams, if I understand that correctly.
The brilliant scheduling that we pulled.
Well, I don't think anyone told Snyder this time around that you can't schedule 2 and get to a bowl game. I think he might have missed that memo.
They might have filled him in after he tried to schedule 4. But yeah, I mean, pretty much you've got a situation where there's, you know, decent experience here and there, especially, you know, there are some decent options like Jeffrey Fitzgerald. We think he's a decent option anyway, and guys on the defensive line. But yeah, it's his first year. You think if he's starting from scratch, it's his, you know, the first year you struggle. Second year, you start to people start to grasp the system, and you get a little better each year. The way it's setting up now, yeah, there's going to be a ton of inexperience on next year's team. So really, it's like next year he's kind of starting from scratch a little bit.
I think the good news, the one bit of good news that we have for next year is that it looks like we have those two transfers, Chris Harper from Oregon and wide receiver Broderick Smith coming back, and then Daniel Thomas will be a senior. So we do have some guys that at skill positions will be pretty talented. But as you said, across the board, we're going to lose so much that, you know, we're going to have to pin our hopes on those guys just to keep us afloat, I think.
Right, and there are also guys, you know, Offner and Freeze on the offensive line. Brandon Harold is a sophomore. I have no idea how to say his name, but I'm going to say it like Kent Herbeck, Alex Herbeck at linebacker. Is it Herbeck? I don't know.
It's like Raybeck.
Raybeck. Yeah. Okay, we'll go with that. And, you know, Joshua Moore is only a junior. So, I mean, there will be talented players next year, but the depth chart just gets rocked. I mean, you drop two deep at every position, and two-thirds of them are gone. So... it definitely won't be a deep team, but yeah, there will definitely be some experienced guys who might be able to keep moving forward a little bit.
At least keep it from being a two-win team,
right? Yeah.
Well, the sad part is, and I talked about this with Ty yesterday. You know, I kind of try to keep up a roster spreadsheet and everybody that's on scholarship and everything, and we're still short of 85, probably by at least 3, 4, or 5 scholarships at this point, and. Given what we've gotten in transfers and signees and gray shirts and everything this year, we're already touching 25. I don't think we're going to even be able to count back. It's going to be a couple of years. If you don't consider giving scholarships to walk-ons, which Ron Prince loved to do. But, I mean, if it's going to take at least 2 or 3 years just to get back to 85, which is kind of ridiculous in this, you know, current environment. You know, it just boggles my mind.
Ross, what do you think? I've been asking them so far, but what do you think so far here? Hello? Uh-oh. Oh, we're dying. This is...
Texas has seceded, apparently.
This podcast is crashing and burning already.
Hey.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh. You live?
Yeah, well, we sort of have you.
Sorry. All right, you're going to have to feed me a refresher where we are. And as soon as it cut back to Bill, I lost you guys.
Well, they were just talking about the depth chart problems next year with all the seniors and everything. And just in general, you can reflect back on what you said on Wednesday, I think. But what are your thoughts about the next 3 or 4 years, say, with Bill Snyder and K-State?
It's funny to be fans of another Big 12 North team. I've got to ask, was it not one of the most morbidly funny things to watch Ron Prince desperately save a program? Well, by turning up his rosters into JUCOs.
Well, and getting an extension after he did it.
Exactly. It's one of those things, you know, obviously have a fairly decent rapport, enough that we call ourselves the Unholy Alliance, but at the same time, watching him completely forego building a program and a job, and in turn screw over the program this before all of the secret deals and such, you have to know you're in for a bit of trouble if you're... it over to 19, 18 or 19 JUCOs in one class, but not only was the house burned down in the fire, but it seemed like the foundation got.
Well, I mean, you put your tinfoil conspiracy hat on, which is I love to do from time to time, and you know, you look at that. You Ron Prince had talked. I don't know where I got this quote from, or even if I'm imagining it. I try to block that part out of my mind, but. I think what he was trying to do was build this roster so that Josh Freeman's senior year, they could have this wonderful year, senior laden, and they could just go out and sweep the Big 12 North and who knows, maybe throw an upset in the Big 12 championship game. But I guess Ron didn't get the memo that these players and coaches all have to stick around for that to happen. So
and that you might need coaches who are not comfortable on a FCS level to achieve that.
Well, I mean, there's an endless supply of guys from D2 that are willing to cut their chops in a BCS conference.
Absolutely.
So, all right, I got to ask this, though. It's funny, like, during the Ron Prince era, when it started, I was still frequenting Tiger Board at least a little bit. And over there, you know, let's just say that the K-State fans you encounter at Bring on the Cast is a little different than the ones that come over to Tiger Board.
I'm shocked.
And so we got to hear all offseason before 2006 that like Prince, it seems weird, but he's scary smart. He's so smart. He's unbelievable. He's like the new age of coaching right here and blah, blah, blah. And I got to ask, like, I don't know what you thought at the beginning, but at what point did you decide, yeah, this just isn't going to work?
Brett, you want to take that one first?
Yeah. Well, I'll admit that, you know, I was pretty wowed by his ability to quote just about every single business book written in the past 10 years. I mean, the man is a Jim Collins encyclopedia, but, you know, I think the thing that really got me was Louisville last year. I mean, I thought a lot of the problems were, you could gloss them over and say that there were some roster inefficiencies because, I mean, Bill Snyder didn't leave him the greatest program in the world. I think most observant and in touch with reality K-State fans would agree with that. But at the same time, in Louisville, you know, all the bad things that happened at the end of 2007 and everything started caving in, they just kind of reappeared. I mean, we had a couple of good wins over bad teams in the early part of the year, but then we thought Louisville would be the coming out party. I mean, it was kind of a mediocre Big East school. It was on national TV, and we would at least go out there and win. And when they realized, you know, they couldn't tackle anybody, and Ron Prince brought everybody home at 3 in the morning to run stairs, that was the big warning sign, red flashing lights for me that said, this guy's got to go.
Ty, what about you?
Yeah, it was kind of a two-step process for me. It was funny. I was really doing everything I could to avoid studying for the bar a couple weeks ago, and I was going through the archives and Bring on the Cats and reading some old articles from 2007. And I was just, it was amazing to see how on his bandwagon we were, because, you know, he went to the bowl game the first year, and then we almost beat Auburn, and then we did go to Texas and beat Texas the second year. And, I mean, we were talking about ourselves like we were the top three or four teams in the conference, and nobody was laughing at us. You know, it was like, wow, this thing's really working. And then how fast it all went downhill at the end of that year as we got beat 5-2 in the last four games of the season. Went up to Nebraska playing maybe their worst team in the last decade and gave up 70-something points. That was the first step of my process of this may not work. And like Brett said, then the next year it was like, well, let's see what happens. You know, maybe that was an aberration. Maybe, you know, we just had something going on at the end of last year. And then all of a sudden, I agree 100%. When we went to Louisville and just laid that egg, I think Brett and I talked a little bit about on email, like, you know, is this the point where we start saying, you know, maybe Ron isn't the guy for the job? Because up to that point, we'd been, you know, I look back at it and, I mean, we defended the contract extension. We defended everything. And then all of a sudden, it just went to hell in a handbasket there. And that was the end of it for me.
Well, and here's where Seth would offer some humor into the situation. But, yeah, it was kind of a maybe it was just being defiant at the beginning because of the whole, you know, always scary smart, is he, kind of thing. You know, we were kind of skeptical initially, but I was really kind of tracking Josh Freeman's progress as a way to see what kind of future this had, because, you know, you're not expected to win your first year, and he kind of did and he didn't. He did. They upset Texas, but then they also got smoked by Missouri and Kansas. Mm-hmm. And so it was kind of a mixed bag that first year. But I just can never get away from the fact that Josh Freeman's footwork never improved. I mean, that's like the number one job of that's your quarterback coach's only job is to figure out how to, you know, improve the fundamentals of your quarterback. And, I mean, dude has a cannon. He always seemed like he had a good head on his shoulders as far as he knew what he needed to do. But just the fundamentals never, ever, ever improved. And that just blew my mind. I think Missouri fans are fond of making this comparison, that he really was kind of a Quinn Snyder for football, and that he knew everything. He knew the right way to say everything. He just came across like he could quote, you know, Quinn was a lawyer from Duke, and they talking and actually getting results are two different things. I don't think Quinn ever made his coaches run stairs after a road loss, but that one was creative.
I love that comparison, but as a Missouri fan, you at least had to have some solace in the fact that, oh, well, Quinn Snyder's around Mike Krzyzewski long enough that maybe through osmosis he learned something. Our consolation was, boy, he spent a lot of time around Al Groh. And obviously, you know, we're ready for success. I mean, we're waiting for those 9-3 seasons to just start raining down upon us.
Yeah, we
well, who knows? Maybe. Competed in the ACC.
Of course.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, I do remember when we hired Quinn, my initial two thoughts were, well, we're probably going to be pretty good, and God, I hope he doesn't bring Steve Wojciechowski onto his staff. Those are pretty much my two. And I mean, I guess, you know, Missouri, they did succeed to some level. That, you know, they were good in the tournament when they made the tournament, but clearly the expectations and the reality were off in both cases. So, all right. So, okay, well, let me just get on record then, like with both of you. What are you expecting this year?
This year is such an unbelievable crapshoot for us right now. Curtis Kitchen, who covers K-State for 810 Sports in Kansas City, wrote, is five things that we need to do this year to be successful. And it's really incredible that we're talking about, we've got these five things that we must have, you know, go right for us to win seven, eight games is maybe our ceiling if everything goes right. That's really a kick in the junk, to be perfectly honest. And you know, if everything falls apart, you know, maybe we're looking at four or five wins. I feel like if things go moderately well, as you know, as long as we don't just get decimated by injuries, as long as Daniel Thomas is not a complete bust at running back, as long as the players don't just completely, you know, not, you know, completely fail to pick up Snyder's system, as long as things work out moderately well and we improve during the season like Snyder's teams generally do, I think 6-6 is probably what we're looking at.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, I think, you know, I kind of compiled all of our prediction post the schedule this week, and everyone, almost to a man, basically said 6-6. I think, and, you know, we're obviously trying to cover our bases, so, you know, we're just either overshooting at 6-6 or undershooting at 6-6, depending on how it goes. We like to sit right on the fence. But, you know, what I think is, if you look at the schedule, I don't think K-State's going to win at UCLA. I hate saying that, but I really think that that's going to be the game that deflates a lot of K-State fans' feelings on the season. I think a lot of people, especially remember Snyder's success against Neuheisel back in the day, I think that they're thinking that the same thing is going to happen again, even though Neuheisel's at a completely different school. I think that's just going to break a lot of people's hearts. And yeah, I think K-State can probably start off the season pretty well because, you know, they got Iowa State and Arrowhead. And I mean, but I think it's going to be rough. I think they can win a few games at home due to the favorable schedule, and I really believe that going into the last 3 weeks of the year, they're probably going to be sitting there with six wins, and they're going to have to find some way to beat either KU or Missouri. And if they can, they can probably get to a bowl. If they can't, they're just going to have to sit at home, because there's really no way they're going to win a Big 12 road game this year, considering it's Oklahoma, you know, Texas Tech, Nebraska. They're not going to beat any of those teams. I hate saying that, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I do think this the schedule very much sets up in a friendly manner with the two, with, you know, UMass and Tennessee Tech, with, you know, not only Louisiana Lafayette, but a rebuilding Louisiana Lafayette. They don't have the two guys who played so well against K-State last year. So, I mean, that's
the best dual threat QB that Ron Prince has ever seen graduate.
That's right. Well, anyway, yeah, so that, the non-conference is definitely shaping up. I mean, 3-1 seems very realistic. But, I mean, you don't have to go at Ames. You get them in Kansas City. You get home games against A&M, and you know how down I am about Colorado. So, no. You know, clearly, if I'm counting those six wins, you're absolutely right. If that's how you get to 6-6, that means you're starting 6-2.
Yeah.
And then you play at OU, then you play Kansas and Missouri at home, then you play at Nebraska. I mean, I do not want a Missouri team to come into Manhattan like facing a Bill Snyder team that's fighting for bowl, you know, for a bowl bid. That, first of all, Bill Snyder versus Gary Pinkel doesn't usually work out for Missouri very well anyway, unless we're talking recruiting. But, I mean, there's definitely potential there, even if K-State is only incrementally better than they were last season, just because, I mean, this is about as favorable a schedule as you can possibly want in being in the Big 12. Getting Iowa State,
yeah,
like 2 hours away, and then getting A&M in Colorado at home, not to mention Kansas and Missouri. Like, this is definitely a favorable situation.
Yeah, definitely. And the other thing that's kind of weird, you know, when you're trying to predict the season as a K-State fan, is historically Bill Snyder's teams do extremely well in the month of November. Mm. Just due to his practice approach, due to the way that they just kind of do their sawing wood approach over the course of the season, November usually turns out pretty well. And, you know, if the team picks things up, and, you know, granted they are an upperclassman-heavy team, you know, maybe things will work out well, and maybe they'll beat KU in Manhattan, and maybe they will beat Missouri in Manhattan, and who knows, we could be staring at an 8-4 season. But I mean, just as easily, if, you know, we get some injuries to a few key players, you know, we could be staring at 4-8. So, I mean, it's extremely difficult to predict, because you have to hope that the ball bounces a certain way, and you have to hope that everyone stays healthy and that things historically progress like they did. I mean, there's so many variables for us that even trying to predict something is really, really hard.
And it almost
go ahead, Ross.
And I know, Ty, you've touched on this, for the division as a whole. The division itself seems like one giant question mark.
Well, yeah, I agree.
And it's funny because we're talking about, you know, when we discuss K-State, we simultaneously talk about how Kansas and Missouri are in much better shape than they were when Bill Snyder was coming up the first time around. And then in the next breath, we talk about how much the Big 12 North sucks. So, I mean, it's hard to really figure anything out North related. But, Ross, that does give a nice segue to the other main topic I was going to bring up today. And that's just simply, what the hell is going to happen in the Big 12 North this year? So anybody want to take that one? I know, Ty, you wrote a post about it the other day. I mean, it's very easy to talk yourself out of all six Big 12 North teams right now. Who have you talked yourself most into?
I think that the best answer for that question you just posed would be if we sat here in silence for about 5 minutes, because that's about what goes through my head when I try to figure out the Big 12 North. A good point was made to me the other day that I think Nebraska in some sense is in a fairly good position, because they pretty much know they can rely on their defense. I mean, yeah, the linebacker is a question mark, but their secondary and their defensive line look pretty solid, I think. So I think that, you know, if you can rely on a fairly solid defense, if it's good enough to slow down the offenses that we're looking at in the Big 12, then they have a pretty good foundation to start with there. But, you know, then again, their offense wasn't nearly as good as Missouri's last year, and they lost their biggest parts of their offense like Missouri did. So, you know, are they going to be able to throw the ball, or are they just going to be a team that people are going to stack 7 or 8 in the box against and stuff the run, kind of like a Colorado? And, you know, are they going to have to win games 21-17? Because I don't see that happening in the Big 12 these days.
Brett, what about you?
Well, I think Nebraska's probably in the driver's seat, just like Ty said. I mean, you know, all things being equal, I'll go with the team that probably has the most stout defense. Now, like Ty said, I mean, how they're going to progress offensively is going to say everything. I don't like picking Kansas just because, well, one, I don't like picking Kansas, and two, the defense is still such a huge question mark, and they're going to be starting, at least from what we can glean, a redshirt freshman tight end at left tackle this year. I mean, there's just a lot of question marks about KU that I think are really glossed over by the local media here in Kansas City, at least, while history awaits for them. it's really wide open. I think Missouri, I think a lot of people have been down on them, like Phil Steele and some of those folks. Yeah, I like Missouri. I don't like Missouri finishing any lower than probably third, just because, I mean, they've implemented good systems. And a lot of times when you end up using good systems, you can plug and play more than you have to rely on reloading talent, like K-State did when they had their, you know, the option running with, we went from L. Roberson to Dylan Meyer. You can plug and play a little bit more with what Missouri is doing. So I think they'll be a little more consistent. So basically I've named just about everyone in the North other than Iowa State and Colorado, and I'm not really big on either of them. So I think K-State could probably finish as high as second. I think Missouri could probably win the whole thing or probably be in the same know, same situation. But if someone put a gun to my head today, I'd probably go with Nebraska, Missouri, K-State, KU, Colorado, and Iowa State in that order.
Right. I think the biggest thing that people have to remember with KU is they're basically going to have to sweep the North. They're five games against the North. And are you going to say that they're likely to sweep games at Arrowhead against Missouri, at Manhattan against K-State, especially after they've been beat down by their three South opponents, and at Colorado, if Colorado's, you know, better this year than they were last year? I mean, the odds of that happening are not really in KU's favor.
Ross, how
about
you?
It's funny, too, because I'm just going to jump in here and say, you know, 2 years ago in 2007 when they made their big – everybody just laughs off the schedule. And then the 2 years where they really could be set up to make an impact, that's when the schedule comes back and hits them the hardest.
Yeah, that's why we need to redraw those damn schedules.
Yeah.
Not that we've discussed that before.
No, not at all. But
I think the way I made great points about Nebraska, I think if it's really the difference of picking for standings, and if I was to place some kind of, this is the best team in the North. Yeah, they do have the question marks on defense, but like, I mean, all those road games, the South is brutal for them, especially the one game that they should be able to rest on in the South, Texas Tech. If I recall, they have to go to Lubbock this year, which isn't going to be easy any year.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm picking the standings, it's probably Nebraska at the top. If I'm picking the best team, I think it's Kansas. But, you know, what Brett said with the plug and play a little bit, don't get me wrong, I love our recruits to death and everything, but for everyone that has said so stunted boards that we're simply reloading at this point as if we're Florida or Oklahoma or Texas, I don't know that I'd go as far as saying that we can just rebuild. I don't think it's a rebuilding year in the sense that 5-7 or 6-6 is a success, but at the same time, so many questions. Outside of Derek Washington and Sean Weatherspoon, because you've got, for the second generation in a row, you're having to receive the best or replace the best school history. We really don't know what we have on the receiving core because Jared Perry's been inconsistent. Denario Alexander's been hurt. Jarrell Jackson's been one season and not seeing any playing time out of SEMO. Missouri's a question mark. Colorado's the sleeper team for the 53rd consecutive year. To expect out of K-State, like we've touched on. Iowa State will be Iowa State, and then, you know, Kansas and Nebraska, we've talked, no, and it was, I think that's probably one of the best parts of the entire post Ty wrote was the title. Is anyone going to win the Big 12 North this season?
I think I'm just going to go pick Iowa State and just not think about it anymore. I think that's, because the more thinking gets you nowhere at this point. I mean, you're right about Kansas' schedule and the fact that I do think they have the best secondary in the North. I think they've got the best skill position talent in the North. But, I mean, we have no idea what they have on offensive line. And Arist Wright is their only – is their best linebacker. And so, like, clearly they have question marks. And clearly getting Tech at in Lubbock, you know, what did they do? Last time they were in Lubbock, they lost 30-17. So that's not as bad as I thought it was going to be when I started to make that example. But, you know, I do think – schedule aside, everything aside, I would pick them number one. But then it just, everything becomes a question mark because, I mean, I do think Nebraska is going to have a pretty good pass defense this year with the pass rush. They have not proven to me at all that they're going to stop anybody in a good running game. And, you know, having to go to Columbia and face Derek Washington, having to go to Kansas and, well, face Jake Sharp, sorry. I almost got to do that. I think that they're going to have... they're going to have trouble winning at Missouri and at Kansas, but then at the same time, they get Tech at home. They get Oklahoma at home, and I don't think they'll beat Oklahoma, but this whole time I've been talking about OU's offensive line, how it'll sneak up and bite them once, and you figure if it's going to bite OU, it's going to be on the road against a good defensive line, which means right. Nebraska might have a chance if their offense is worth anything, and we don't know if it is.
Yeah, it may not.
And so I'm just going to pick Iowa State because I can't think rationally good or bad about Missouri at this point. We're too close to the season already. If somebody says something bad about Missouri, I will defend them for an hour and a half straight. And if somebody says something good, I'll tell them they're wrong for an hour and a half. so really, I'm just leaving Missouri aside as much as possible. I don't know. I just can't really commit to any of this. You know, I clearly I don't think Colorado's worth anything. I don't know if you can tell that or not.
Well, it was a mystery to me up
okay.
to this point.
And I just can't. I can't trust Nebraska to win where they have to win with a brand new offense. But yeah, I'll just okay. Forget Iowa State. I'll just hop on the bandwagon. I'll be like everybody else, and you know, we'll go with Nebraska for now.
Well, I think one thing that I was just kind of tossing around in my head about Nebraska, and when you compare them with KU, if you think that those are the two teams that are maybe most likely to win the North, if we exclude Missouri for the moment, when you think about it, the way you beat Texas Tech is you have a great pass rush. It doesn't really matter how good your secondary is, because your secondary is just going to be making the tackle
right
out there. Because if you have a great secondary, well, yeah, I mean, they'll be there to make the tackle, but they're not going to prevent the catch. But if you can get a push on Texas Tech and you can rush the quarterback and knock him down and get a sack every once in a while, that's how you beat Tech. And Nebraska has them in Lincoln. They have probably the – well, not probably, almost certainly the best pass rush in the North. Just out of their defensive line. So I think, you know, when you compare them to KU, it's a lot more likely that Nebraska beats Tech in Lincoln than KU beats them in Lubbock. And I think that right there might be enough to give Nebraska the nod over KU, just, you know, that matchup, everything else being equal.
All I can say about Nebraska for sure is they better not tie, because chances are they're losing the tiebreaker with Kansas, Missouri, and Colorado on the road.
Yeah,
they better win outright. So,
well, I think just think of that tiebreaker hissy fit. We had Texas last year, and then
Nebraska.
We had Nebraska this year.
They might see and form their own conference.
You know, I would be willing to find out what happens, though. Just sign me up for that right now, actually.
Oh, I'm in.
Well, I think Kornblight actually said it best in the comments of Ty's post. I think, you know, what it amounts to is the marker's been set at 5 wins. You know, I think whoever gets to 5 wins is going to be the one that takes this thing. And if none of us get to 5 wins, then we should just talk to the Mountain West about creating our own conference. Because this is, I mean, somebody's got to get there. And somebody's going to end up backing their way into it. And I think that there are some folks on the Kansas State side, probably the lunatic fringe side of our base, that think we could probably be that team. And who knows, maybe if I get drunk enough, I might actually say something.
Well, I think, yeah, the closer we get to the season, it is. We've been, you know, we're saying the whole 5 win thing for a while. I think, you know, Kornblight has been saying it for a while too. It's harder to find 5 wins sometimes. Like for Nebraska, that means if they lose at Missouri and Kansas, that means they have to win 2 out of 3 against Tech, Oklahoma, and at Colorado, and not slip up against, you know, Iowa State or K-State or whatever. And then for Kansas to get to, like you said, for Kansas to get to 5-3, that means they either have to beat Texas at home or OU at home, or sweep the North, winning at Colorado, at K-State, and Kansas or Missouri and Arrowhead. For Missouri, you're figuring 2 losses with OSU and Texas. But that means they have to sweep Nebraska and Kansas, or being a ridiculously young team, not lose a game like at K-State or at Colorado, which they are going to be extremely capable of losing. And so, yeah, suddenly 5-3 isn't a given. I have K-State going 4-4, and at this point, like, get to the clubhouse at 4-4 and see what happens.
Yeah,
this is going to end up being just like the Syracuse-Kansas National Championship game in 2003, where either Boeheim or Williams was going to win it. It was just going to see who didn't screw it up the most to actually win that game and get their first national title. This is going to be the North. The team that doesn't turn the ball over, some meaningless stat, is actually going to be the one that runs away with this thing.
And luckily, only Jim Boeheim had recruited an athlete with 9-foot arms in Hakeem Warrick. I still don't understand that block shot. It doesn't physically make sense to me, but I'm so happy it happened.
It was awesome.
All right, so, you know, I realize we just talked for 35 minutes and didn't actually reach any conclusions. K-State's going 6-6, and nobody's winning the North. What about the South at this point? Like, OU or Texas? Who's romping the 4-4 North winner in the Big 12 title game?
I have to pick Texas at this point. Oklahoma's question marks on the offensive line concern me, and I mean, Bradford's going to be Bradford. He's going to pass for a million yards and a million touchdowns, and they're going to put up a lot of points. But against a team like Texas that has a good pass rush, and granted that, as I've pointed out to Ross recently, and Brett too, I think, no matter what Tim Griffin says, the Big 12 South does not necessarily run through the Red River Shootout. But I have to pick Texas at this point. They just seem like they're an overall better team than Oklahoma to me.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Texas. I think for all the reasons listed above. And because it's Colt McCoy's turn to win the Heisman Trophy. I mean, if they're going to give it to one or the other one, they're just going to give it to Colt this year. So, yeah, I think Texas is going to take it. I don't know. Oklahoma State, part of me wants to pick it just so I can sound cool at the end of the season if they actually do it. But I don't know. I just think Gundy will probably lose his head at some point during the season under all the pressure, and I'll just go with Texas. Colt McCoy is a pretty good quarterback, and I think he'll probably keep them level-headed throughout most of the year.
Ross?
You know, everybody seems to be taking Texas, and it makes sense just because part of me wants to see he'll put Sam Bradford on his ass and see if that kid can actually respond when he has to be touched at some point during the game. But, you know, Ty said the dub does not always mean the free road to the Big 12 championship game. Part of me feels like I'm picking Texas. So many people I've seen have picked Texas that naturally Oklahoma has to win that game. It always seems, just like last year, like, you know, this is Oklahoma title, and then all of a sudden Texas comes out, quote-unquote, comes out of nowhere. 1 week later, they're the number one team in the country and completely pantsing us in Austin. For now, I'll take Texas just because I echo the same sentence in that Texas returns quite a bit, and it's still a damn stout football team. Don't know what Oklahoma has on the offensive line, and we've never seen what happens to Sam Bradford when he doesn't have an offensive line. So that one question mark alone tilts it in favor of Texas. I'd be surprised to see Oklahoma take it.
I think it's not necessarily the OU-Texas game that I'm worried about when it comes to OU. It's just that, well, technically I'm not worried about anything with OU, but I think that it's going to be the random game that a team figures out how to get into the backfield with regularity. And, you know, whether that's Nebraska or they have to go to Lubbock again, that didn't turn out well last time.
No.
You know, there's just going to be a random game like that, like they had a couple years ago, where the defensive game plan is good, the offensive line is out of sync, and things start heading south very quickly. Now, it could benefit OU if that game happens against, like, Miami. You know, when they kind of have their reality check before the Big 12 play starts. But yeah, it does. I do think that Texas is going to have some issues. I think their offense is actually going to get a little worse this year than last year, but they're still, to me, definitely the smartest bet of the two when it comes to actually picking a winner. So, all right, well, we are approaching 40 minutes. This wasn't quite the ramble fest that Ty and I had a couple months ago. But, you know, I enjoyed it. That's all that counts. So, all right. Well, we'll plan on doing this again. We'll have to figure out how to arrange an Unholy Alliance meeting in person with full quorum sometime in the next however many months, be it in Manhattan or in Kansas City for a certain person's 21st birthday.
Hey, who are we talking about here? Come on, Brett. Get yourself together.
Or whatever the situation may be, yeah, we'll have to figure that out. We'll have to leave it open for the public, you know.
Brett, you graduated and you've been out of college for like 5 years, and you're not 21 yet.
I know, I'm Doogie Howser. That is actually my secret thing. I was. I can't.
You have no idea how pumped. You had no idea how pumped I'd be if you were Neil Patrick Harris.
All right. Well, on that note, we're going to head out. I'm very disappointed. I looked on iTunes for both my. The word unholy and the word alliance. And there was one Amy Winehouse song for unholy, and that was about it. I'm not going to put in an Amy Winehouse song in this podcast. Sorry. So instead, we're just going to go with something awesome I found recently from. So this is from Live at the Apollo 1963. This is James Brown and Night Train. We'll talk to you guys, I guess, the week before Mizzou K-State in November. See you guys.
Thanks, Bill.
See ya. Thanks, Bill. I said I love someone.
but I know where I'm gonna find them. Alabama.